Welcome back to Labor Press, the show about labor and the laborer. Here are your hosts, Neil Tappel and Bill Holfeld.
And we're back with more good talk right here on Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz at AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Bill Holfeld, and in the studio with me is my co-host, friend, and producer, Joe Maniscalco. Joe, you know, it was really good talking to Mary. I mean, she's providing a vital service there, and I love the holistic approach that she has.
Yeah, I like the whole idea of how they are reaching out to the newer generation. I think because that sets a precedent, and also it's going to have an influence on the older guys, too.
Absolutely. And there's all kinds of factors that influence the workplace, and I think our next guests are going to talk a little bit about that as well. Yes?
Labor management, right? We always talk about, a lot of times we talk about an adversary relationship when things are not working out. And here's an example right now with Stockton Steel, which is an example of workers and corporations working together to produce over 4 million work hours without a safety incident.
Ooh, that's my kind of story. So who do we have on to talk to us?
So right now we have Stockton Steel's Corporation Safety Manager, Tom Davies, and IW District Representative Eric Schmidley.
Yeah, Tom, Eric, welcome to the program, fellas. And as Joe just pointed out, so often we hear more and more about the adversarial relationship between management and labor, but you know, it sounds like you guys have really hit a sweet spot here to be able to be that productive and that safe at the same time. You've found the way to get production without sacrificing the safety of the worker, and we definitely want to hear about that.
Well, from our perspective, the management perspective, this has been a long journey for us. It's been 9.5 years now since there's been a lost time injury in the facility.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it was about 9.5 years ago when we were having a safety committee meeting, and the record wasn't too good then. And our CEO came into the meeting, which he attended on a regular basis, and he said, "Hey, guys, you know, you're good steel fabricators, but I want you to be excellent steel fabricators." And everybody kind of looked at each other, and he said, "You're missing the safety component. We need to have more safety." And I think then it just kind of clicked with everybody in the room that this is serious business, and everybody is serious about it. And it's just not about, you know, management wanting this. We want everybody to go home the same or better than when they arrived. And so at that moment, we had senior leadership from management and labor both come together and said, "We're going to do better." And then we just started hitting milestones along the way.
Well, Tom, what was it like back then before you decide, hey, we need to do something? What was it like? What kind of injuries were you seeing?
You know, we were having a lot of injuries that were, you know, really about people not paying attention to each other and helping their brother iron worker in the shop. We had worked hard on getting all the physical hazards corrected, guards and cranes and wire rope and chain, and working on that aspect of it. But we're missing the component of a culture of safety.
Of safety. That's an interesting phrase. Talk a little bit more about that and what that means, because I don't know if people outside a manufacturing or a construction environment would understand what you mean by that.
First, what we had to do is we had to all say, all injuries and work-related illnesses can be and must be prevented. We can't have accidents. We have to have that mindset in everybody's mind.
So a zero tolerance for accidents.
For accidents. And the next thing we needed to do is make everybody a believer in it, that everybody needs to accept the personal responsibility for ensuring their own safety. Everybody's their own safety steward. Next, employees at all level have to be equally comfortable in saying something to somebody that, hey, you better put your safety glasses on. Hey, you know, we need to look at that rigged a little differently. When everybody in the shop started paying attention and helping each other and had an attitude that we can and we're going to be excellent fabricators, and by senior management on both sides, management and labor, dedicating the resources, making incentives, it just started everybody get on board.
Well, Eric, I want to bring you in here. What was the reaction of the workforce when these changes started being implemented?
You know, I can actually firsthand, 15-plus years ago, I was working for Herrick Stockton Steel, and he was. Culturally, it was, I mean, our goals were 50 days. Let's get to 50 days, guys, because a lot of little minor, you know, nothing's minor, but little injuries that were coming up and just constantly, you know, ruining safety days. And, you know, that was the original part. And I was a steward at the time in the shop, and I was on one of the safety committees back then. And it was trying to get it out there. And I just remember, you know, the change in the shop sometimes scares people. And, you know, literally it was, we'd walk into the break, you know, into the safety room and take a Band-Aid or do your own eye wash and never report anything. And then they started, you know, hey, wait a second, we need to report this. We need to figure out why. And you know, it scared people because they thought they were going to be punished. But that's not what it was. It was, we wanted everyone to be safe, you know. And it is. It's scary. But at the same time, guys got on board, and this is proof. I mean, it's changed a lot over the years, and the safety committee is stronger and bigger, and they, you know, really make sure the guys understand that this is for all of us. We want to see you go home with all of your fingers and all of your toes and, you know, no injuries, and so it's been positive.
So, Eric,
I'm sorry, Joe. Just one of the points I wanted to make, sorry for cutting in, is there had to be some difficulty with the buy-in because, I mean, I've been out there enough to know that there's a bit of a machismo, you know, attitude about a lot of guys out in the field, and it's like they're quick to say, oh, I'm hurt. They're not so quick, rather, to say, oh, I'm hurt, oh, I need help, or nobody wants the eye roll when you tell a buddy, hey, you better put those goggles on. So sometimes that can be, you know, a tough obstacle, yes?
You get it. But at the same time, based on, you know, hey, safety is important, and they'll find, you know, it's in the end, it's you have to respect each other and say, hey, look, I do, you know, and I actually believe, you know, it's hard. It's easy to say we're union brothers and I'm always looking out for you. You know, and some guys will eye roll that, but in the end, it's, hey, I'm looking out for you, and I want to see you safe. I don't want to see you get an eye injury because you're not wearing your glasses. And in the shop atmosphere, lots of grinding, lots of, you know, little things could be flying around. It's important to keep those safety glasses on. So,
now, Tom, when you institute all these changes and people started, you know, going home safer, how did that affect the production of the plant?
The production certainly improved because there wasn't interruptions because of somebody being injured and having to leave the plant and being off work, and it really helped production. Also, you know, a lot of training. We do a lot of training because when you start asking people to change how they're thinking, you need to do some training with them, you know, just use that grinder safe. Well, you need to go a little more than just say use the grinder safe. You need to go into some training and educate people. And people used to say, well, why are we doing all this training? Because people just leave. And my answer was, what if they stay?
good answer, Tom.
What if they stay? So it's important that we train the workforce so everybody knows their expectations of what they're need to do every day and what they're responsible for, themselves and others. And without the training aspect, you just can't get there. You got to get people's buy-in and confidence, like Eric was saying, that, you know, we aren't doing this. There's not doing this to discipline people. We aren't doing this just because we maybe think we can save money. We're doing it because we care about your safety and your well-being. Our workforce is our biggest asset, and without skilled steel fabricators, healthy and safe, we don't have a business.
Oh, from your lips to God's ears, Tom.
Yeah, once they knew that this was for real and it wasn't the flavor of the day, everybody jumped aboard. And it's such a great place for me to go visit every month. Always looking forward to going out and having a safety committee meeting with those guys, because real stuff gets done and real stuff gets talked about. And in the safety committee meetings, everybody knows. Everybody can talk about anything they want to about safety. And it's an open discussion.
Well, that's the kind, you know, that's the kind of enlightened management and well-trained and intelligent workforce that come together to increase production and make us great in no uncertain terms. I mean, that's the kind of work that working together. That's the kind of cooperative stuff that make us a great nation.
Yes, and our CEO at our celebration barbecue, when he was talking to all the folks there, he said, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put an X right where I'm standing, and I'm going to be back here when you make 4,000 days to congratulate you again."
Well, Tom, Eric, I want to thank you guys so much for all the great work you do out there, for proving that labor management cooperation works, for being productive members, and for coming on the program today.
Thanks, guys. Right now, we're going to throw it back to Bill for your spotlight on American labor history.
Thanks, Joe. This is real in keeping with today's program, I think. On November the 26th, 1910, a factory building in Newark, New Jersey caught on fire, killing 25 textile workers. This should have been a call to arms for workplace safety reform, but because it was in Newark and wealthy people didn't see the people who made their clothing die, nothing happened. The situation would be very different after people did see the workers die precisely 4 months later in New York during the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. The Wolf Muslin Undergarment Company occupied part of a four-story building in Newark. At about 9:30 a.m., a fire broke out in the factory. Owned by a New York woman named Barbara Glass, this was a circa 1860 factory that lacked any fire extinguishing technology whatsoever. There were several different factory operations in the building. The fire started in the light bulb factory, where gasoline spilled on the floor and the gas caught fire. Workers immediately threw sand on the fire, but in fact it was still smoldering, and a few minutes later it exploded. There was a firehouse directly across the street from the factory, but there was nothing the firefighters could do to extinguish the flames. In fact, several firefighters were injured rescuing workers. The workers on the lower floors escaped, but not on the fourth floor. Six of the workers burned to death while 19 jumped. 40 more were injured while trying to escape. The Women's Trade Union League assigned Ida Taub to investigate the fire and testify before the coroner's jury, but the jury paid little attention to her remarks. The coroner's jury decided they died from misadventure and accident, so nothing was done, and Gilded Age attitudes prevailed with most juries, even as late as 1910, finding no fault with corporate negligent murder of employees.
Thanks, Bill. That does it for another episode of Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. If you like us, follow us on Twitter at LaborPressNY, write to us at bcb@laborpress.org, find us on Facebook, and visit our website at laborpress.org. And don't forget to tune in here Sunday night for more Blue Collar Buzz on AM 970 The Answer.